In this episode of Radio Today's weekly podcast, why radio stations need more YouTubers, what you learn by tracking audience reactions second by second, and how to make your podcast better. I'm Trevor Dann, and I've been at Next Radio, the annual conference of radio ideas and ideas for radio people. Let's meet some of the speakers.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
Cliff Luay, why do we need more vloggers and YouTubers on the radio?
Well, I think I've been surprised that given the amount of media that they've infiltrated over the last few years, they're completely re-architecting television, advertising, social platforms. See, Facebook Live are paying influencers and getting involved in them in their new broadcast strategies. I've been somewhat surprised that radio seems to be quite late to the game, apart from one or two exceptions.
But isn't it true that when we as radio go to those people, they say, what's in that for us? If we come on your radio station, you constrain our talent. If we stay on YouTube, we do what we like.
Well, I think that media is terrible for just trying to take one thing and crowbarring it into another platform. Really, what it's about is saying, look, it's all about engagement. And that's the thing they have in common. But understanding they are audiovisual. I think everyone listening to this podcast has dealt with TV presenters coming to radio and them having to be broken in and stop saying, hey guys, or acting as if they're talking to the mass audience. Once they're taught the tricks of leaning forward and one-to-one and speaking in someone's ear, etc., a lot of them get it very, very quickly because they understand their audience and they're authentic.
So if we were setting up a new radio station, we should be going on YouTube, finding some of those characters and saying, come on in, the water's lovely in radio.
And also you've got the opportunity to access their audience. What you want in radio is to increase your reach and your share. These guys have reach and they're really, really good at maintaining share. So instead of acting as if we can teach them all about radio, I think there are a few tricks that they can teach the radio world as well.
Now, if you don't mind me asking you about this, you're a lawyer, so you understand words, don't you?
I'd like to think so.
What is re-architecting?
It's basically changing your mindset. It's really getting you to think about things in a different way. If you look at most radio stations' websites, as I was over the weekend, and look how audiovisual they've become. Do you remember the old days of radio where you weren't allowed to mention the television in case someone might go to it instead of listening to you and remembering your call sign? And if you look at radio stations' websites now, they're just effectively audiovisual channels. That's re-architecting. If you're looking at what Global's done to its studios, physically, they have re-architected them as audiovisual stations. So that's re-architecture right there.
I've enjoyed some other new words. I enjoyed ideate.
Ideation, like yes.
What does that mean? Well, again, I mean, having an idea and having a think.
Well, you know, you can call it blue sky or you could be talking about thinking about the future. But at the end of the day, it really is about new ways of looking at old things and old ways of looking at new things and seeing what they mean.
I also loved millennipreneurs.
That was a new one on me, I have to say. A little bit clumsy, but it did come from the BBC, so I'm not going to be here to second-guess their info.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the very first time on Radio Today, as he's just told me, Andrew Bailey from Sky. I missed your tour.
Oh, thanks,
I was
Trevor.
Interviewing someone else.
Someone more important than me.
somebody equally wonderful who
I can
was dashing
it.
Off. What was the point you were making then?
Well, my talk was kind of about, I spent 18 years working in commercial radio, working for, you know, back in the day for Capital Radio, for EMAP as was, and latterly Virgin Radio and Absolute. And so all my experience has been in commercial radio. But a year ago, I left and I went to the other side. I went to telly. And so I spent the last year in telly. And what I did today is I just talked through some of the observations I had at where I think telly can learn from radio about the way we've done things in commercial radio. And the other way, I think radio can learn a bit from telly. So I talked about that, some of my observations, and then looked to the future and how mobile, is influencing radio and TV, and perhaps some of the things that we could be doing as we look forward to a sort of mobile future. I called it the mobile menopause. And that is, you know, it's happening. We're in the
some
change.
Touching, you know.
We're having hot flushes at the moment in the mobile genre. And I think, you know, you can't turn back the clock. That we are menopausal, but we don't know when it's going to finish or how it's going
to
finish.
I did get back in time to see your little film from, was it New Zealand?
Yeah, it was TV3, Paul Henry in New Zealand.
Right, and they've built a radio studio in a television studio rather than just putting some cameras in a radio studio. It did look different.
It does look different because, you know, we've seen how the BBC and how LBC, you know, and even back in the day, you know, James Whale, we've seen, and Chris Evans with Sky and the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show, we've put cameras in radio studios. But the point I was making is, if you're going to do proper cross-media programming, what they've done at TV3 is take a TV set and they've built a radio studio within it. And it's so much better. The camera angles are better. It's brighter. The lighting is good. You can see the presenters are relaxed. And they've kept the radio format. You don't have tons of live location reports. They're not spending money on that. They just bring guests in, as we would in radio, and they put people on Skype. They're not trying to fuss around with the kind of conventions of TV. It feels like a radio breakfast show, but it's beautifully filmed and lit. It's perfect. I love it. And I think someone in the UK should do it.
It'd be interesting if a major talk station in the UK was owned by the same company as might own a major news outlet on the television. Do you think that would ever happen?
I mean, that would be interesting, Trevor, wouldn't it?
You couldn't possibly...
18 years of journalist and you're trying to lead me down that pathway.
Well, I wonder speculatively if such a thing might ever occur.
Yes, I wonder that too, and I'll continue to wonder it after this interview finishes.
He will not be drawn. Andrew Bailey, thank you.
Thanks, Trevor.
Francis Curry, I love your real-time assessment of what people are listening to. How does it work?
It's very simple. People have an app where they have a player at the top and they listen to some audio, and underneath there are some buttons from sort of like it a lot to really dislike it, and every few seconds the buttons light up and people have to press how they're feeling about that bit at that time. If they don't press the button, then the audio just pauses until they've made a decision. So you get, every few seconds, you get a reading about how people are feeling about the bit they're hearing.
So from the work that you've done so far with people all over the world, what are the big points that we can learn from this research?
Well, I think every single one we've done is different, but there are probably two or three things. The first one is a lot of radio presenters will tend to overdo the setup. They will try and contextualise and try and explain before they start the bit. But actually, the audience just... that can often lose audience until the bit starts. So the first big lesson is get to the point. People haven't got time for a minute or 90 seconds of waffle, and if you try and do that, then you've really lost people before you've even started the main content.
What did you learn about using speech within a music format and how long it should go on for before you play the next tune?
You know, it's one of the big questions. How long should a speech break be? And the smug answer is as long as it needs to be and no longer. And the real answer is speech length is not about duration, it's about entertainment. So, for example, we played a bit today from Elvis Duran. It was the longest bit we played, and people did not say it was too long. Some other bits we played that ran 90 seconds, the listeners said it was too long. So it's all about engagement and entertainment and nothing to do with duration.
Francis, thank you.
You're welcome.
Craig, Bruce, when I asked Matt Deegan last week who he was most looking forward to hearing from, he said you.
Himself?
No, he said you. You do this podcast where you talk to radio greats about, or radio on-air greats,
yes,
about what they do and how they consider their business. What are the learnings you've got from those conversations?
So many. I think there are just principles that good presenters eventually land on and find that help them with longevity. I mean, at the heart of it, they're just great raconteurs and they're brilliant with the English language. So at a baseline, you know, they're very talented. They've got an ability to craft a phrase and to be able to say something that normal people can't say. And, you know, if you go to my motivation behind the podcast, I've always just been fascinated by people who can talk well. I don't know why. I'm just really interested by people who can communicate in a really powerful way.
I think you as a producer are saying to us that we should cut them some slack, we should give them some room, we should not constrain them too much. And yet, if I may say, so the previous generation of Australian experts who came over here were the people
the
who said, tell them to shut up.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I don't think cutting the slack is the thing. I think that most of the people that I've spoken to are their own worst critic. I mean, there is no feedback that they could get from a content director or a mentor or a producer that would be any harder than that what is already happening for them in their own heads. I think that there's just a level of appreciation that producers and content directors need to have for the performance. It's not easy. Good presenters make it look easy, but it isn't. And they need to know that you're in their corner. Now, that doesn't mean you give them a chop out and, you know, let them cut corners and do whatever they want. It's just about understanding that it's not an easy thing to do.
Very interested by what you said about the one thing you can't play us is what everyone says at the end of the interview, which is, was that all right?
Yeah.
You know, was that what you wanted?
Yeah.
There's something quite needy, isn't there, even about people who are apparently great characters.
Yeah, and I'd hate to use that word because they're not. It's just they it's nerve-wracking putting yourself out there. And, you know, it's partly good manners. They you know, most of the podcast interviews that I've done are people that I know. So, you know, part of it is, hey, Craig, was that okay? But it's also, can I get some feedback and can you recognise my performance? And, you know, we underestimate that. I mean, I think, you know, breakfast shows and hosts, regardless of what they say, they want feedback, useful feedback, in the right context at the right time that can help them get better. And this idea that doesn't matter how good you are or what your ratings look like, you're always looking for objective feedback. How am I going? What is there an area that I can improve?
Just one final thing. We've heard a lot this morning at Next Radio about how we should embrace the vlogosphere, that we should get a few more YouTubers involved. Is YouTubing and radio broadcasting the same thing? Are they two different disciplines?
I think they're not different disciplines necessarily, but I think we need to be careful as an industry that we don't move too far from the core, which is, are we hiring people that can speak well into a microphone? You know, are we hiring good communicators? And if they come from a YouTube world or the blogosphere or whatever it might be, that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, you know, you need to be able to decode the world for your audience. And if you can't do that, it doesn't matter how many followers or views you're getting or your Instagram account sitting at whatever number, it still comes down to the ability to be able to get on the air and communicate well. And I think that's still, we see it in Australia. Some of the audio clips was with my presentation from a guy called Mick Malloy. Now, Mick doesn't have a mobile phone, has no Facebook account, no Twitter, no Instagram, and he's one of the most successful broadcasters in Australia because he's good at radio. He's just doing that well. So I think we over-obsess that component of it. And, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to hire someone that can present the world to its audience in a way that is unique and interesting.
And your podcast is called Radio Game Changers?
Yeah, radiogamechangers.com is the website.
And you're going to do some in the UK?
Yeah, so we've got Ken Bruce, Jamie Thixton up in Manchester tomorrow with Mike Toole and Nick Ferrari, Christian O'Connell. So that's recorded over the next couple of days. It's going to be really exciting, and we've had some great feedback already from the UK audience that are listening to the podcast, so it's going to be great fun.
Well, thanks for talking to Radio today. Always. And in the tradition of your podcast, how was it?
You did well. Really good. We'll air check you later.
How flattering.
More to come amidst the sounds of hospitality at the Next Radio conference at the Royal Institution. In that segment, you heard lawyer Cliff Fluet, Andrew Bailey from Sky News, consultant Francis Curry, and from the podcast Radio Game Changers, Craig Bruce. All their presentations will be up on the Next Radio site shortly. John Holmes, and much more on this podcast after this.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
Richard Huntington, Saatchi & Saatchi. I think you effectively said that a lot of marketing and promotion is bollocks, which I was very refreshed to hear. Where do we go wrong in your estimation as radio programmers? What's wrong with what we do?
Well, I don't think there's a hell of a lot that's wrong with what you do. I think what I'm worried about is what we do, that the content between the radio content is letting everybody down, and we don't use in marketing and advertising the same level of understanding and audience empathy that you do in programming. You know, and it leaves your average ad break or promotional content or sponsorship opportunity bereft of real connection. Because we're not understanding audiences
you
properly.
You were talking about how we're a bit narcissistic as well, and about how perhaps we and perhaps you in your industry are concerned with what we want, not what our audiences want, and how they think about themselves. I loved your
painting of Narcissus, looking at himself and not looking at the woman across the creek. How does that manifest itself? It made me think of all those terrible radio station promos for ourselves, where we shout about our frequency, or we're on tablet and we're on, you know, this, that and the other. Is that the kind of thing that you think we should be better at?
Well, I mean, that's really interesting. I think that's genuinely come out of the concern that most people in orthodox media have had about their futures and desperately trying to adjust to new revenue models and new platforms. I don't think that that's at the heart of our problem. I think that even when we call ourselves customer-centric, whether it's a radio station or a brand owner, the truth is what we really care about is return on investment, shareholder value, profitability, and sales of our brand or image. And that's where we start. We may then go on to try and find out how consumers fit in the picture. But most of our research starts like that, rather than with, I have this glorious and wonderful group of people I wish to serve. What's it they really want out of life?
Market segmentation, where you say things like over 55s, which I'm always very sensitive about because it makes me the same age as my mother, who's in her 90s. But the way we talk about millennials and 1534s or whatever they are, is that all a bit, I was going to say, is it all a bit old-fashioned? Is it just not precise enough?
It's both. It's old-fashioned. It represents, you know, a moribund view of Britain, a sort of Brexit view of Britain, perhaps, and it's overly simplistic. I mean, I really struggle now I'm on the cusp of being 50. I really struggle with how people see people like me, and that's for the first time. And then you think the acres of audience that exists above that age group and how fundamentally different their experiences of life have been, then I think we've got a problem. Now, I understand that there needs to be some form of trading currency. But when it bleeds over into the way that we create content and communications for people, I think it's extremely damaging.
An interesting thing, I think, for our industry is that we've often designed radio stations and radio formats precisely to fit in with those segments that marketeers or advertisers have designed for us.
Yes, and you know, I think there's a cautionary tale in that, perhaps. I look at perhaps the way in which outside your medium, but The New Day was launched by Trinity Mirror, technically to deliver an advertising audience, or in fact the way that Channel 5 was created to deliver an advertising audience, but those people didn't necessarily exist. I think it's much smarter what Argent have done with The New European, which for a moment appears to be a real audience that wants to be served. We could learn a lot from that.
It's interesting that the Britain's most successful radio station is still Radio 2, a station which almost breaks all the rules about, you know, about how you should be targeted and you know you shouldn't be too varied, and they do all those things.
And they do all those things, and it's extraordinary, and in many ways that's why we desperately need the BBC in its current format, because it's the broadcaster that's able to deliver that sort of innovation. It may be odd to suggest that Radio 2 is innovative, but it's precisely the place that odd and unusual tastes can be catered for by this medium, which isn't beholden to advertisers.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Tom Webster, you've been talking about podcasts. You're on one now. What advice would you give me?
I'm on one now. How very meta. You know, the promoting your podcast is the skill, is the muscle that so many podcasters don't have. I think even in the radio industry, promoting a podcast is not a skill that a lot of radio people have. So I would reach out to study some of the great content marketers that are out there, people who really know how to market their podcast. My friend Jay Baer, Mitch Joel, Michael Stelzner. These are people who have had great success marketing what are not typically, you know, entertainment podcasts are more like business and marketing podcasts, but they really know how to dot the I's and cross the T's.
You were talking about the podcast experience in America, and it is interesting, isn't it, that it's the NPR people, it's the speech radio people who've made a go of it, because it's just kind of what people want from a podcast. They don't want, they can't get music radio podcasts, but they don't. Yeah. There's not really a market for that, because you might just as well stream.
Well, I think they just have, they have the muscle memory to do it. They already have an existing infrastructure to produce and monetize spoken word content. So it's natural that a lot of the podcast content you see out there is coming from them. because again, they have that infrastructure in place. And it is spoken word content at the end of the day. If you podcast music, you'll get shot in the face by a lawyer. So it's building those spoken word entertainment skills, I think, that is really key for any podcaster.
Your job at Edison is to understand the market. So what is the market for podcasting? I think you said that actually it's not growing as fast as the smartphone penetration, for instance.
Well, it's growing linearly. It didn't grow quite as fast as streaming music did. But if you think about it, that's because more people listen to music. That's, you know, music is a much bigger market than spoken word. But to some extent, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you have a lot of media producing music, we have a lot of people consuming music. So I think as more spoken word, original spoken word content gets produced and invested in, that those scales will tip a little bit more.
You must go to a lot of conferences all around the world. What do you make of this one?
I love this one. It's a brilliant venue. I never thought I'd get to be on stage at the Royal Institute because I'm a crap scientist. But as a speaker, it's fantastic.
Well done. Thank you very much, Tom.
Cheers.
Nisha Lahiri, Steve Martin, you were talking about making news for young people around the world. It's the great thing that we don't realise, that the BBC World Service is a very young network.
It is, because it reaches people in very young countries. If you compare the average age of, for example, the United Kingdom, and then look at populations of countries in Asia and Africa, you'll find that we're in the old world, and yet we're seeking to reach audiences in the young world. If we're going to grow our reach to Tony Hall's target of 500 million by 2022, we've got to find some more audiences, and that means young people.
Anisha, we're always told that young people, not only do they not listen to the radio, but they're not interested in the news. But you've got evidence that that's simply not true.
No, that's not true. The thing is, they might not often come to the BBC, young people, but so our aim is to take our product out to them. They listen as a music stations, digital and radio. So our product goes out to them on those platforms. And they're interested in stories like business and light news and politics, which we didn't even know about. So there you go, they are interested.
And your product is called the BBC Minute, and I know you license it out to a lot of stations that aren't obviously BBC stations. When you're thinking of your minute, what's the lead story going to be?
Well, sometimes you have a big story of the day, and that's great. But when you don't, it's a mix. So we do, unlike a lot of other BBC news bulletins, we do sports, entertainment, business, science, politics, celebrity gossip, entertainment, all of it in one bulletin, 60 seconds. I know it's a lot of to put in, but we refresh it every half hour, so make sure a little bit of everything is in every bulletin.
Well, I think the point about BBC Minute is that when there is serious news and important news on a global scale, that the BBC can be guaranteed to deliver that. And one of the reasons that radio stations around the world license BBC Minute is they know that they can focus their own journalists more on the local stories, where they may be in a more tight competitive set with the next station up the dial, knowing that the BBC can be guaranteed to cover off the global stories when they break.
I thought what you were doing, those extracts you played, showed something about how the tone can be right for a young audience without being disrespectful and kind of groovy for the sake of it.
Yeah, well, when there is a big story, when there's a big event happening, then we take a serious tone with it. If it's a big event like the Olympics, then we take a lighter tone with it. And then if it's a mixed bulletin, then we have the fun stories where we have a conversation and a bit of a laugh, and then we, you know, we're back to the serious face when there's a bigger news story. So it's a combination, and they seem to like it.
Well, wish you every success with your BBC Minute.
Thank you, Trevor.
Much. Thank you.
Bloody hell.
Bloody hell.
It's only John Holmes.
It's only, is it? Yes.
What are you doing? He weren't even built.
No, that's right. I was, I think, what's the word I'm looking for? Available.
Were you on the bench?
Actually, I've sat in for Ian Lee before many times. back when he left the 11 o'clock show was the first time. and then again on LBC several times.
He's a serial leaver as well, rather
without,
like yourself.
Without Ian, I literally would have no work. So, so keep dropping out, Ian. It's fine.
So how's it going at Talk Radio?
I think it's going fine. I mean, it's.
Am I allowed to editorialise? I like it.
That's good.
I prefer you without the tunes.
Do you?
Mm.
That's. I like that. I like that you said that. Do you know what? It's. We were talking about in the interview on stage there. It's in terms of it's just content on the radio. that's what all it is me thinking of things, writing them down and saying them, really. And that happens whether or not there's tunes or not. There's now just has to be more of it because you've got to fill 3 hours, which I've learned, obviously, to my cost, that it now takes up a hell of a lot more time than it used to. But it's such a broad palette of things and ideas that can happen, some of which don't work, but hey, you've just tried it out and it doesn't matter because then there's another thing along in a minute that you know will. So I kind of like the challenge. It was always going to be a challenge, coming off the back of Music Radio, to do it for 3 hours a day, every day. I didn't know when we started what it would be, and it very quickly became a piss take of talk radio by accident.
And you were surprised?
Well, I wasn't planning it exactly. Someone the other day
John,
said to me...
John, that's your shtick.
I know. I don't plan anything. Someone the other day said to me, and this is not that I'm saying, yes, it's as good as that, but someone said, this was just a random listener, just said, it's a bit like tuning into Brass Eye, but for 3 hours a day. Because none of it's true, and it all sounds real, and it's just balls, isn't it, underneath? Yep, pretty much, that's it, yeah. So I kind of like there's a lot of thinking goes on about how we're going to tackle things, because we want to hit the big stories, like we were talking about there, you know, the New York bombings, how to do so. You know, from a satirical point of view, sure, but also you've got to do it, but I don't want to do it like anyone else would do it, so you've got to come up with a way of doing it. So a constant challenge, but I kind of like it.
Good to see you again.
Thanks, mate.
Should we go down the pub?
Let's do it.
Well, that was John Holmes, and now it's time for the inevitable coda. It's the annual interview with James Cridland and Matt Deegan, who put together Next Radio. I thought it was marvellous again, James. What did you think?
I thought it was great. No, I really did. I think what's really interesting, when you look back over the last 6 years, I think that Next Radio has changed, and it certainly changed from the first year. I think we were a radio conference. This year, we're most definitely a conference for radio people. And I think the really interesting things that we've heard today from people who aren't in radio and actually had very interesting things for us to learn, I think that's been, you know, one of the most exciting parts of the day.
It was a chance, as one of the speakers said, to ideate.
Oh, yes. I wouldn't maybe say that loud, but it's...
I hadn't heard that word before, but that's typical of the Next Radio experience, that you do walk out thinking, I know how to re-architect.
Or even that, maybe should I re-architect? I think it definitely poses the question. And I'm just watching some of the sessions this afternoon. Young guy, Ben Bowler from Chew TV, and he just makes me really depressed because I thought, oh, I used to be young and enthusiastic, and he's creating something really interesting that touches in our sector. And a lot of their thinking is very valuable for us. And that's the cool thing about Next Radio, as James was saying, is that you can sort of absorb a bit of that and reinterpret it for your own station.
There was another brilliant word as well, which was millennipreneur, which frankly, gosh, there we go. But I mean, I think that again shows some real cleverness from, it was in the BBC's session all about the BBC Minute, and it shows some real cleverness on taking data, taking information and working out what is a good product to make, what is a good piece of content that we can actually go out and help what the BBC is there for. Mm. So, you know, and a fantastic word of millennipreneur.
You're living in Brisbane now. It's been, what, nearly a year. What do you make of Britain when you come back?
Well, you know, I mean, it was very strange coming into Heathrow Airport and not seeing any EU signs. Literally, there were no EU signs. It was very strange. I still consume an awful lot of UK media because UK media comes into Australia an awful lot. And I find it, you know, really interesting looking at the differences between what we do in Australia and what you guys do in the UK, and just, you know, the
pronouncing
differences.
Pronouncing data,
although, you know, that was a big Clive Dickens thing, and I'm not entirely convinced that he was right. The amount of Australians who pronounce it data as well, which is a good thing. Although pronouncing the colour maroon, yeah.
I know,
ridiculous.
So the most important thing on behalf of the delegates this year, will there be another one, Matt?
We haven't had the chat yet, have we? It does make it a little bit more complex. We're in two continents.
Oh, go on.
But we'll see. I mean, it's a lot of work. We enjoy doing it. But it makes us have a bit of a think about what it's there to do each year. It was interesting. I think we have to do a better job at communicating what it does to people. And so there were some if you look at the radio sector, some groups or companies that don't send anyone or send very few people compared to their size. And I think we have to do a better job of showing what it is.
I think there were more people from Danish radio here than there were from many of the radio groups in the UK. And I think that says quite a lot.
You carried the announcement of the ARIA's nominations, which demonstrated Glexit.
It did. I mean, you know, I loved watching those announcements. I loved being a judge this year. And I was like sitting there being a judge this year and going, I wish that such and such a company had entered, because they could have cleaned up in the category that I was in. And, you know, and I think it's sad. You know, it is interesting, the comparison between the UK and Australia. There are three Australian radio industries. There's community radio, commercial radio, and the ABC. And I really hope that that doesn't happen here, because that would be a great mistake.
And I think things that cut across can show real value. I think the 30 under 30 was a really fascinating mix. There's eight people from Global on the list, and I think nine people from the BBC, and, you know, people from other places. And that's like an enthusiastic bunch who really want to get on and do well, who have a way to be supported through that process. And I'd hope that an event like this, which is full of ideas to take back to your radio stations, is that we know that bosses who send staff, and I know that Bauer have always been great at sending people, particularly from Golden Square, that they get real value back for their stations. And hopefully, and that's not anyone else's fault, that's up to me and James to communicate that value to those people.
Well, congratulations. I'm proud of you both. It's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
You heard Richard Huntington from Saatchi & Saatchi, Tom Webster from Edison Research, Nisha Lahiri and Steve Martin from the BBC, John Holmes from Talk Radio, and the organisers of Next Radio, James Cridland and Matt Deegan. One final observation from the conference: David Lloyd gave us a wonderful presentation about using words, in particular, too many words. Imagine, he said, if a novelist wrote like a DJ speaks. Hello, he'd say on page one. Thanks for joining me. I'll be here for the next 342 pages. But before we start, my thanks to the writer of the last book you read. In the show today, a murder, two divorces and some steamy sex scenes. But first, all that without telling you what's actually happened. Well, I'm paraphrasing, but it was a good lesson, despite which I'll say David will be here with Radio Moments in a minute, and I'd like to thank Stu Clarkson for looking after this podcast for the last 2 weeks while I was away, and say here he is with this week's news.
Thank you, Trevor, and it's been another big week of radio industry news. Awards first. The shortlists are out for the new Radio Academy Awards, the ARIAs, taking place in Leeds on the 19th of October. The BBC and Bauer dominate the nominations. That's mainly because Global has chosen not to enter now that they're no longer a patron of the Radio Academy. In the National Music Breakfast Show category, it's between Chris Evans, Christine O'Connell, Grimmy, Asian Network's Tommy Sandu and Heat Radio's Emily Seagal. Speech Breakfast sees the Today programme, Five Live Breakfast and Good Morning Scotland and go head-to-head, while for local breakfast, it's between KLFM, Sam and Amy at GEM, and the BBC local radio breakfast shows in York, Leeds and Stoke. The speech broadcaster and music broadcaster category is entirely made up of BBC nominees. For speech, it's Jane Garvey, Jeremy Vine, Kirsty Young, Nihal and Stephen Nolan, while for music, it's Clara Amfo, Jamie Cullum, Jarvis Cocker, Mr Jam and Radio Foil's Stephen McCauley. And the local station category sees Bowers, Hallam, Forth and Radio Borders up against BBC Essex and BBC Radio Derby. Nationally, the shortlisted stations Absolute, TalkSport, One Extra, Radio 2 and Radio 4. Sarah Cox hosts the ARIAs at the Leeds Arena next month. Performances from artists including Rick Astley, Kaiser Chiefs and Gregory Porter. We'll see you there. The 2016 Gillard nominations out this week as well. Station of the Year between Radio Merseyside, BBC Coventry and Warwickshire and BBC Hereford and Worcester. At breakfast, it'll be a Yorkshire station winning the trophy as the three nominees are Liz Green from Radio Leeds, Toby Foster from Sheffield and Georgie Spanswick from York. Radio Today understands that Celador has dropped five female breakfast co-presenters from its Breeze stations, plus made a network breakfast producer redundant. It leaves just one female presenter on the Breeze brand doing the networked evening show. Traffic and travel provider Inrix is reportedly making plans to centralise some of its staff. It's looking at plans to move data collection teams to Birmingham, though broadcasters would remain in the regions to provide audio bulletins to stations. Radio 1's introducing a new photo phone first downloadable music playlist idea. It'll be themed around the station's main playlists and specialist music programming output. Steve Austins, who you heard on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, is leaving his role as editor of BBC Radio Wales. He's been running the station the last 7 years, but says he's taken a personal decision to step down. Mr. Jam is moving to evenings on Radio 1 from January, while Annie Mack goes on maternity leave. DJ Target replaces him on One Extra Evenings. Danny Howard will do the Friday night dance show on Radio 1. There's a schedule swap around at BBC Tees as well, as presenter Mike Parr takes a six-month break to go travelling. John Foster looks after his mid-morning show, while Bob Fisher steps in for John on afternoons. And if you've not seen Cam Kelly riding a camel through the streets of Bristol, followed by some can-can dancers, as he returns to the radio in the city with Sam FM, then do check it out. It's at radiotoday.co.uk, where you'll also find the full list of nominees for the Arias and the Gillards. That's the latest industry news. I'm Stuart Clarkson. Radio
Moments. This week, 61 years ago, commercial TV launched.
Tonight, 7:15, September 22nd, 1955. We add another sentence to the long history of London. London, with all its familiar landmarks, the Houses of Parliament, Westminster Abbey.
Beautifully done. And as TV grew, we worried in radio. Would our favourite programmes lose audiences? Well, not if we made an effort. The BBC were mischievous on the day, inventing a dramatic episode of The Archers to take away the impact of bloody ITV.
Everybody,
help!
Hello, what's
up, Grace? Oh, do come quickly! The stables are on fire!
The what?
Oh, heavens, Grace. The whole loft's ablaze! Hey? Come on, quickly! Help me with the horse!
Look, Grace, what's going on? Look, what's all the commotion? Fire, Reggie! The stables are going up. Now ring for the fire brigade.
Grace Archer dead in The Archers, as a spoiler to the ITV launch this week in 1955. We can't leave her there, though. Come on, come on, come on!
Grace! Grace! Oh, Grace. My God! Grace. Grace!
Where?
Where is she?
Up there?
Oh, she may have gone out through the tech room window.
No! She must have... There, look!
What?
Under that beam.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Get it off her! Go and help me! Get down!
Oh, dear. Poor old Grace Archer. Tony Blackburn left the BBC recently, and this week in 84, he did that for the first time.
I'd like to also thank the National Press, actually, for being very kind to me yesterday and writing some very nice things over the last, 4 or 5 weeks or so, and over the last 17 years, for that matter. And above all, I'd like to thank all those of you who have listened in to the programmes that I've done. I hope I've made you happy. I hope I've made you laugh sometimes. And thank you very much for putting up with some of those dreadful jokes as well. I hope to be back now and then on Radio 1 from time to time, and this is the sort of end of an era, really. I opened up Radio 1, and I'd like to just say on behalf of the people that your mums and dads probably will remember, the ones who opened up Radio 1 initially, Roscoe, Johnny Walker, Stuart Henry, people who aren't with us anymore but on various other radio stations, Kenny Everett, David Hamilton, Terry Wogan and Ed Stewart, and all the other guys who were part of this particular era that I've been part of.
Tony Blackburn leaving Radio 1 this week in 84. Tony was well known until recently for hosting Pick of the Pops, and this week, 55 years ago, Alan Freeman took over that show.
We've got a twist here and there, also some of the Song for Europe melodies, all included in Unit 1, the newcomers to the top 20, Unit 2, the new releases, Unit 3, the Pick of the Pops LP spot, while Unit 4 highlights the names of Billy Fury, the Everly Brothers, Elvis Presley, Chubby Checker and Cliff Richard, because they're your choice in this week's top 10.
Oh, just beautiful. So posh too. Alan Freeman, who took over Pick of the Pops this week in 1961. It had been hosted until then by David Jacobs.
Well, that's the Fleetwoods at number 7, and Mr. Vaughan and the Kay Sisters at number 11 with Come Softly to Me. After an absence of only 3 weeks, our old Pick of the Pops chum, Lonnie Donegan, is back in the hit parade.
It's amazing, isn't it, hearing the first sounds of that chart format that we know today. This week in 1967, the Light programme was coming to its end, preparing for splitting into Radio 1 and Radio 2, and that meant some programme changes. Children's Favourites came to an end and prepared for a rebrand to Junior Choice.
Hello, children. Everywhere, this is Uncle Mac. Good morning to you all. And here in London on Saturday, the 7th of February, it's quite fine and cold so far. Well, another mixed bag, and I hope a few requests that I don't recall having included before. If you're settled down and ready, so am I. Let's begin with a gay one, sung by Alma Cogan. This is for Alan.
Uncle Mac with a gay children's favourites, which ended this week 49 years ago. We don't do much American radio on Radio Moments, but this week let's observe the last Ron Lundy show in New York this week in 1997. Ron was an example of what they used to call boss jocks, with real vocal power and reverb, sort of style that never really came over here.
That'll do, that'll do. 1205, 77 WABC, always a better song on New York's radio station. Ron Lundy, I want to play this Stevie Wonder song for you. You're the sunshine of my life. You are the sunshine.
Well, farewell from New York, at least, to Ron Lundy this week, 19 years ago. He died 6 years ago. Commercial radio now, and what's this growing in Salisbury?
A Sunday morning, 10 a.m., and at Stonehenge, the first walkers of the day are in tune with the spirit of 5,000 years. A Sunday morning, 10 a.m., and at Hanging Langford, fisherman Paul Knight prepares for a spirited battle with the trout in the River Wye.
Spire FM launches with the great Chris Carnegie this week in 1992. Spire was one of the swathe of smaller commercial radio stations of the early 90s. The BBC's local radio was a long time in gestation, and at one stage it was felt that commercial radio might actually beat it. One of the plans which helped speed along BBC local was a trial set of stations. The programmes weren't actually transmitted, but they gave a flavour of what the content might be, and they were played to the influential Pilkington Committee this week in 1961.
This is Radio Durham, your local BBC station, and this is Stanley Williamson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Radio Hull, your local BBC station. The time? 6 o'clock. Well, good morning, it's Michael Barton here in the Guildhall on a rather uncertain morning, a few splashes of rain about, but
if you're wondering, as we have, if Charlie Chaplin will come to Durham City to get his honorary degree in person next July, the answer we've just had is yes, he will. We've just been talking to the Registrar at King's, Mr. Bettinson.
And it was recordings like that this week in 1961, which paved the way for the BBC local radio we have now. That was a far cry from the sound of Radio X, which launched this week last year.
Hello again, Great Britain. Well, this is a bit weird, isn't it? So it's 6:32, Monday, 21st of September. Welcome to a brand new radio station. Yeah, I've been waiting for 3 years for this place. Sitting on my backside, doing nothing. Watching Judge Reinder, or whatever it's called. And now I'm back on the radio. That's right, the money finally ran out.
Moyles returns to the new Radio X this week in 2015. So with the final In Town Tonight this week 56 years ago...
Once again, we stop the mighty roar of London's traffic.
Chris Evans debuting quietly on Weekend Radio 2 this week 11 years ago...
This is for you.
And Pete Murray, born 91 years ago...
Tony Blackburn used to listen to me at school. Horrific thought.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio.
Thank you, David. Thanks to everyone at Next Radio, researcher Hayley Hayes, you for listening. Next time, I'll be at the Radio Festival. Join us for that if you can. I've been Trevor Down. Ta-da!
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.